This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
All right, everybody, welcome back to a new episode of the Auto Repair Marketing Podcast. I'm your host today, Kim Walker. Generally, Brian is here and he kind of takes the lead on things, but we have another man from Shop Marketing Pros here with us today, our very own Shop Marketing Pros marketing service advisor, Michael Doherty. We are going to be talking to you today about service advisor auditing and skill building. But before we jump in, let's just give a pause and allow our sponsors to get the shout out that they deserve.
This episode is sponsored by ShopBoss. Manage and grow your shop with top features like integrated payments from 360 Payments. Declined repairs don't have to be lost revenue. AppFuel's call center schedules follow-up calls and equips your team with everything they need to close the deal. Get started now at appfueled.com.
Okay, Michael, I think this is my second time with you as a guest on the podcast. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I want to say it was last year. I think it was shortly after the Worldpack Expo, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was a couple months after that you guys had invited me to join the podcast, and it was a fantastic reconnect, and almost a year later. So
that's right. And I just saw you last week. So was it last week or the week before? Are we already 2 weeks out?
This coming weekend will be 2 weeks. But yeah, it was like, you're right. It was like 2 weekends ago. Yep.
Very cool. But we get to hang out again today. Thanks for taking time out of your day, because I know that we are keeping you super busy. But I know people know who you are. You also have your own podcast. And so we're going to probably maybe share a couple of things that you've talked about on your podcast. But I'm curious what you can tell our listeners about your transition from being a service advisor in the auto repair shop. For those that maybe don't know, Michael was our service advisor at our shop many years ago. We won't date ourselves with the number of years, but like, let's just talk about your transition from being a service advisor in auto repair shop to now being the marketing service advisor. So for people that are like, what in the world is a marketing service advisor? Just imagine the service advisor at the shop is the one in the front, responsible for meeting with the clients ahead of time, getting them through the whole process. So Michael is our service advisor here, where he's meeting with potential new clients and helping them get on the path to joining us for marketing. So what was that shift like for you, Michael? Did your mindset have to change? Tools, equipment, which you don't really have, well, your computer is equipment, but just talk a little bit about that transition.
Sure. First and foremost, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. And thanks for the opportunity. The shift was interesting. And I say that because this was a remote working position, which I'm grateful for, having been in the shop atmosphere, you know, really kind of at the front counter, out in the parking lot, engaging with clients, back in the shop, back at my desk, back at the front counter, like a lot of moving parts and pieces, literally, right? I wish I could have put a pedometer on and see how many miles I track per day walking around, and I never did. But, you know, going from that to a fully remote position, it took me, I'd say, a good 3 or 4 months to really kind of get acclimated. And I'm not like nailed down to my desk by any means, but like I work from home now, and sometimes I'll like go to like a local coffee shop or something like that, you know, change of scenery. But that was really, I would say, the most, not difficult, but just change for me. Mindset wise, I think this was the best role I could have been in to prepare myself for the position at Shop Marketing Pros as the marketing service advisor. And, you know, I get to bring all of my knowledge that I've learned over the years, not just from automobiles, but people as well. A lot of those skills, a lot of those lessons, and then learning about the marketing aspect, which I really knew nothing about. And I think it's with anything, like when you're excited about something, when you're passionate about something, you retain the information quicker and you're excited to get up and get at it. So just in the beginning, it was, you know, I think you had described it, Kim, as onboarding is, you know, being fed from a fire hose. So really just learning all that new information, but being able to talk with shops, you know, locally and nationally every day about their marketing concerns or things that they may not even know that are available to them, but using the service advisor experience, right, of active listening, empathy, being able to talk shop is huge. And I think that's important because it establishes instant credibility with that prospect or client that, you know, you're not just coming in off the street selling them something. You're really there to guide them, to advise them. And that's the beauty of this transition. It was a kind of a meant to be situation. So,
well, I completely never even really thought about that because generally when we hire someone, they've in today's age, right, post COVID, most people have had the experience of working remotely, but I never really thought about the fact that you'd been in the shop, hands-on, face-to-face with the clients, with the technicians, with the team. And I don't know why I hadn't really truly processed that, but yeah, I can see how you've handled that transition and just glad that you shared that. With your expertise in that whole shop service advisor world, I think it's super smart that we snagged you and also that you're doing your own podcast and helping shop owners and service advisors. You talk a lot about auditing for service advisors. Can you talk about what an audit might look like? Like if you're auditing a service advisor, what would you be listening for, looking for, measuring, and how does that equate to real change in the shop?
I think first and foremost, if I painted the picture, that would be me kind of, you know, walking into the shop and kind of gauging, you know, how quickly am I greeted or acknowledged? I've come into some situations having walked into a shop before and there's nobody there. It says, you know, ring bell for help. That's not the way you want to do it, you know? And usually that's some staff that might be running low or, you know, someone's out for a week or whatever, but you still want to, you know, you don't want someone to walk into the abyss.
It is a weird feeling. I've had that before where I've walked into the whole ring bell for service and it just feels...
It's eerie.
It makes me think I'm disturbing someone. If I ring the bell, I'm interrupting someone from what they're doing. I'm glad that you brought that up.
It's weird because like, you walk in and you almost wonder like, did they forget to lock the door? Are they really here or not? You know, like there's no noise going on. There's no music playing. It doesn't seem like there's proof of life, you know? So, but I think first and foremost, just, you know, walking in, if there is somebody there, if they're already engaged, if they're on the phone, right? Service advisor, are you, you know, giving eye contact? Are you acknowledging them? Are you just, you know, hey, you know, be with you in a second or, you know, just, you know, have a seat, something, you know, open palms, just, you know, come on in. I'll be with you in a second, you know, something of that nature.
Talk about that more. You just said open palms. Talk more about that. What do you mean?
I love body language is essential in our industry. You know, I mean, when people walk in, I think there's two types of clients. We have introverts and extroverts, and body language tells a lot. So when somebody's walking in, you know, I don't automatically assume because they have their arms crossed that they're upset. You know, it might be comfortable for them, but I feel like from the service advisor's perspective, open palms just shows immediate, just kind of disarming trust, you know, open palms in the sense of just inviting. I feel like that's good body language versus the opposite, which is just kind of no body language, right? You know, kind of extending, you're kind of extending like a proverbial like handshake or like a hug, you know, you're kind of saying, you know, you're being inviting. That's why I mentioned open palms.
Yeah, no, I like that. I remember when I first started networking, learning about the body language and how do you know if you're at this event, how can you enter into a conversation? Are you like invited in? And a lot of it had to do with being open, leaving an open space. But as a former school counselor or just counselor in general, the way that you have that open nature, or like you said, if you're sitting there with your arms crossed, and sometimes even the desk can be a barrier. So I know I remember sometimes you would come out from around the desk and go like see that person physically, like get in that space with them and not let the desk become a barrier. That front line, if you will, position of a service advisor, is really critical to the marketing results. I know we talk often about the handoff from marketing to sales. And if there's an ad running for a shop and that person picks up the phone and calls the shop, well, the service advisor is that front line. And if the service advisor is not trained or not, maybe just doesn't like the things you've said, they're just acting like they don't care, or they're not engaging with the customer on the phone. All of the money that was spent, all the time, energy, effort that was spent on the marketing that made that person pick up the phone and call just got wasted because the service advisor was not skilled in following through. So I'm just curious what your thoughts are for that frontline position, because it can be a choke point or it can be a multiplier. What are your thoughts on that piece of marketing, service advisor? They're a bottleneck, they're not moving the needle, or they are. Like, how critical is that position?
It's super critical. I mean, it's technically the position number one. And I say that as like face of the business, right? When that phone's ringing or that client or prospect walks in or makes that phone call, I mean, essentially, and I mentioned this in the class that I co-taught with Brian at ASTA when this came up about the service advisor aspect is, I mean, you're being interviewed. Your business is being interviewed at that juncture, and they're quickly determining if they want to do business with you or not. If it's in person, right, your body language, your tonality, your confidence, right off the bat, you're willing to greet them, listening ears, on a phone call, right, tonality and communication. But essentially, I've mentioned to people before, you know, make sure whoever's answering that phone at your business is qualified to answer that phone, because that's a make it or break it.
So what's that look like? Define that for the shop owner listening. You just said whoever's answering the phone needs to be qualified. How do you know?
I would think it comes down to just willingness to be wanting to do it. I think as a service advisor, no matter what you got going on, if you're committing to answering that phone call, you're literally, you know, clearing your mind of whatever's going on. And when you're picking up that phone, the communication right off the bat, the tonality, the, you know, hey, thanks for calling Shop Marketing Pros. This is Michael. How may I help you? And just that warm tone versus, hey, thanks for calling Shop Marketing Pros. This is Michael. You know, you can tell, again, like it makes it sound like I want to be put out of my misery.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly. That's not what you want, right? I hope that people that are listening to this hit the rewind a little bit and go back and listen to those two different examples of saying the exact same thing, but just changing the tone. As earlier, I said, I've had that experience, same thing. I've had the experience where I've called a place and I am the customer. Now, I am a business owner and I'm kind of spoiled in really looking at great customer service, and we do it, we expect it. So when I don't experience it, I can tend to get a little salty. And I'm like, this is not so hard. But yeah, you pick up the phone, and I've talked to people where I'm like, do you even want the job that you have? So let's just say that that's not normal for a service advisor. Maybe there's a service advisor that's just incredible, but they woke up not feeling well. They didn't sleep good. They had a fight with their spouse. The kids were insane. And then they come to the shop and now they have to flip that toggle switch from, here's all the crap that happened last night, today, this morning, and now I have to be friendly to people. How, I mean, surely you've had to do that before, or you've had to talk to service advisors before. How can they do that?
Yeah, it's hard. I think you have to remember, you know, it depends on the environment that you're in, and all environments aren't created equally. But, you know, if you've got a team member, like I remember at Peak, you know, we had two service advisors. So if I was in that frame of mind and I came in, you know, I could say to, you know, John was also a service advisor with us, you know, hey, John, just let you know, man, real quick, I got something going on external. Could you maybe give me an hour before I hop on the phone today? Could you cover for me? I'll still do work, but I just got to get my mind in a better place, right? If you've got someone that you can talk to about that comfortably, and again, no judgment, just we all got stuff going on, but there's also the part of it, which is, you know, just being a professional, right? I mean, when you get to your place of employment, when you get to work, you have to, you know, kind of turn that key 180 and you have to switch your mindset, right? I'm here to do a job. I'm here as part of the team. And that's the biggest thing too, is it's not a self-service position. You're helping your coworkers, you're helping your clients, you're helping your own family, but you know, you have to mentally be always on top of it. And it's not easy to do. And it begins with self-talk. Positive self-talk is so important. You know, we talk about taking care of ourselves, taking mini breaks during the day, staying hydrated. I mean, not staying hydrated is probably going to be the number one cause of you maybe not feeling well in the head or getting headaches because you're just constantly on the phone or engaging with people. Like, staying hydrated is super important. And it doesn't take too long to realize that you're dehydrated, or, you know, we'll call it hangry, right? You got to eat during the day, things of that nature. But, you know, ultimately, like I said, you know, in that position, especially as a service advisor, just being a professional and understanding that when you're going in there, and I think we all have sick days, days we can take, things like that. If it's really that bad of a situation where you're not coming into work, but if you're choosing to go to work, right? Like, getting in the mindset of, I need to be a professional and answer the phone and take care of my team in a professional way.
Those were some real practical ideas. So I hope everybody listened. And if you need to, again, like earlier, just back up and re-listen to those ideas that Michael had, that, you know, that's coming from a place where he's had to do it himself. Even in this position where the person's not directly in front of you, but you're getting on a Zoom call. So you're having to do that as well. And, you know, we all have challenges in life. So if you've had that here, as a marketing service advisor, you've had to make that shift because you're getting on camera with a potential client. So those are awesome. And like, we're kind of labeling this particular episode service advisor auditing and skill building. So that's a skill building perfect example right there.
ShopBoss is software built by shop owners for shop owners. ShopBoss is the shop management software that works the way you need it to, so you can reach your biggest goals without slowing down. Help your techs fix cars faster with intuitive inspection tools that supercharge your operations and keep vehicles cycling through your base. Get into ShopBoss mode with an ROI dashboard that gives you critical information at a glance and updates in real time. And accelerate your payments with BossPay, powered by 360 Payments, by giving your customers more ways to pay. From text to pay, remote payments, and consumer financing, to compliance, surcharging, and PayPal and Venmo mobile pay options. BossPay puts your customers in the driver's seat and keeps your business moving. Plus, their entire team is on deck to help you simplify your day-to-day, flag more hours, and generate more revenue. Other software makes you work, but ShopBoss works for you. Independent auto repair shops, get ready to transform your business with AppFueled. It's time for your professional auto service shop to have its own customer loyalty app. AppFueled will build an app that launches a custom loyalty program for your shop in 30 days or less, fully integrated with your point of sale system. Bring Fortune 500 level customer retention strategies to your business without the Fortune 500 budget. Many shops are enjoying the benefits. Our app engages your customers with a loyalty ladder, enticing them to climb the next rung, coming back more often and spending more each visit, all with your own app. Build loyalty with your customers, to your brand, and boost your shop's growth. Get your first app in 30 days or less, all without breaking the bank. Ready to start? Let AppFueled take your business to the next level. Go to appfueled.com or meet founder Jeremy Glasgow and book your complimentary app vision session at appfueled.com/Jeremy. That's appfueled.com/Jeremy.
Another one, if I'm remembering correctly, I could prioritize. So let me just correct myself. I have listened to your podcast several episodes, but I don't get to listen to every single one. But I do recall one where you're, maybe more than one, but definitely there was one where you were talking about this traffic light method for explaining repairs to customers. So I don't know if this is going to be another skill building moment for any service advisors or shop owners that are listening, but can you walk us quickly through that method and how shops can adopt that themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. Great point to bring up. So I kind of really thought about this before I did that particular episode, but kind of breaking it down in a sense for a service advisor is because, you know, when we get that, we compile that estimate right before we make that phone call to that client to tell them about their stuff, we really have to be in the frame of mind of how we're going to explain it to them, how we're going to break it down to them in a manner that they're going to understand it. it kind of just hit me one day and I was like, you know what? I'm gonna call it the traffic light method, right? So green would be, here's all the great stuff that we see going on with your vehicle. And I fully recommend starting off with the good things first, because usually when that phone rings, you know, that client is kind of cringing before you even start talking, because you're going to tell them about all the stuff that they need and the price points attached and all that stuff. So let's start with positive. Let's start with all the good things that you see going on. Hey, great news, Mr. Jones, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, your tires are at 7/32 of tread life left. Your front rear brakes have 8 millimeters of life left. Your filters look great. You know, here's some things I wanted to point out to you about the vehicle that we see that are going really well. Now, you know, let's get into your primary concern, right? Bring in their primary concern or concerns, address those. And now we have still have two lights left on the traffic light. We have caution and we have red, which is stop. The stop items to me are considered safety items. And I try to frame it in my mind, hey, if this was my mom's car, if this was my sister's car, if it's my best friend's car, how important would it be for me to convey those things to them in a manner that they're going to understand the sense of urgency that these things really need to get done? And the yellow, which is caution, would be, hey, just to let you know, you've got a oil leak in process, right? It's not horrible, but we'd recommend definitely next time you come in for an oil service, let's get you on the books to fix that so it doesn't, you know, create other problems. Oil is very corrosive. Anything it continues to get on, mechanical or electrical, could cause our things to go bad. The expenditure goes up. But breaking it down in a sense that they're going to understand. And most people, I think, abide by the traffic alert, right? When it's green, you're going through, you know, no worries. Yellow, it's caution. You're starting to slow down. And then red is stop, the sense of urgency. I don't want to get in an accident, right? I don't want something bad to happen because I decided to throttle it at yellow, right? But point being, like, breaking it down in a manner that the client can understand. And I just basically kind of came up with calling it the traffic light method.
I love it. You know, we talk all the time about marketing that helps your customers get to know, like, and trust you. And when we're looking at a service advisor, some tend to be like an order taker. Okay, you want an oil change today? Perfect. We're going to do that. Here's, you're done. You're all set. Whereas what we're really looking for is building a trusted advisor, more of a consultant when it comes to customer conversation. So if you were to visit a shop and you were going there to coach a service advisor from being an order taker to being that trusted advisor, is it the traffic light method that would be your approach, or is there a different way you would handle that?
I would definitely endorse the traffic light method. As far as an order taker goes, again, it's based on the mindset. It's based on what you were taught or maybe not taught. It's based on if you're trying to be an elite service advisor or you're just kind of going through the motions and just trying to run the clock down for the day. Again, you know, I think there's a lot of service advisors out there. I'm actually on my podcast, I call it Service Advisor Nation, but I feel like there's a lot of people out there in Service Advisor Nation that are equipped with the skills and they want to excel and exceed, but the environment that they're in prohibits them from doing that for one reason or another, right? You know, there is help out there, right? Get on a service advisor forum, you know, get aligned with, you know, a coach or a mentor. I mean, there's plenty of places to talk to or whatever, but, or you may just be in the wrong environment and you've got to make that choice. But, you know, an order taker is just that, you know, you're taking the information from the technician. You're saying, hey, your brakes are worn out. It's $800. Do you want to do it? Yay or nay? I mean, that's horrible, right? And I hope that's, you know, more of the, you know, exception than the rule for service advisors these days, but I'm sure it still exists, right? And clients want to know, and everybody doesn't speak car. We're educators in the space as well as a service advisor, just like I am with Shop Marketing Pros as a marketing service advisor. I'm really listening to what that client or prospect is letting me know about their shop based on, you know, actively listening. And while they're talking to me, 9 times out of 10 in my head, I'm like, okay, this is the service I'm going to recommend we start with, or this is the package I'm going to recommend we start with, but here's why. And a lot of service advisors don't explain the why behind it. They just look at, I know this, here's what you need, here's how much it is, do you want to do it or not? There's zero trust building there. There's zero empathy there, you know?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense as you're laying it out. And I want to back up to the spot where you said being in the right environment. There's no doubt that there are different approaches, right? Some shop owners, they want to run their shop this way. Some want to run them this way. So as a service advisor looking for a shop that is going to put them in the environment where they can be more of that advisor, you know, I always say that when we're doing an interview to hire someone, not only am I interviewing that person, but that person should be interviewing me. I mean, it's not a one-sided situation. I'm looking for someone that's going to be a good fit for us and our company, but we need to be a good fit for them as well. So if you are a service advisor where you're feeling like you're more of an order taker, but your personality or your ethics tell you that you want to be more of a trusted advisor, a consultant, I love what you said, Michael, about making sure that you're in the right environment. And also with that, like, every shop is different. And I would think that you, Michael, and I keep coming back to auditing and if you were visiting a shop, but you know, if you were getting out there and you went to a shop that was just running low on resources, whether that's funds or time or whatever it might be, if you were in this shop, can you think of two super high impact behaviors or tweaks that a service advisor could start doing tomorrow to drive more trust, more sales, you know, to be more of that consultant? You know, maybe it's behaviors that you are seeing often in shops that you really want to grab those two behaviors and shift them or tweak them. Is anything coming to mind?
Yes, ma'am. So I think the first thing that comes to mind, and you know, I think there's going to be some shops out there that, you know, may disagree with what I'm about to say, and that's fine. You know, you can run your shop the way you want to run your shop, but make it less transactional, right? Like, especially your service advisor. I mean, trust me, the client already knows when they come in for their appointment that they're going to be spending money. That's established. And I'm sure you've done your job of explaining whatever your diagnostic fee is or what they're going to be paying for the service. You're getting pre-authorization basically before their vehicle goes back there. And I really hope that you're doing that. But spend more time with the client. Get to know the client. Get to know their situation with the vehicle. Build in some empathy there. Make it less transactional and more about them. There's not a lot of shops, I think, that do that. Everybody's just kind of worried about the bottom line. We got to make money. We got to make money. We got to make money. Well, I get that. But here's the thing. Taking care of the client, the making the money is a byproduct of that. You know, really opening up. It's not a huge change that you have to make, but make it less transactional. Again, really take the time as an advisor and be an advisor. Guide them. Ask them what their plans are with the vehicle for the next 3 to 4 years. Thank them for their business. You know, when they're coming to pick up, if they don't really know a lot about cars, walk them outside, pop the hood. Hey, while you're still here, is there something I could explain for you? You have any questions about anything under the hood? Right? Empower them. You know, they're all simple things that we can do as advisors, but I think just we've maybe got it in our heads that all we're here to do is just sell. And that's not how it should be. When it's just sell, 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 you kind of create bad environment for yourself in the sense of like, is this all I'm supposed to be doing? No. You know, I think truly as an advisor, you have to really like working with people and also have built that automotive knowledge, that product knowledge, that confidence to explain things in a manner that they're going to understand it. For an advisor specifically, understanding that you're guiding them and helping them and that you're a people person, I mean, those two things together kind of merge into that's your purpose. And when we're guiding and helping people, it's a lot easier than selling to people. People tend to open up more. They're like, they feel more at ease. They're willing to do business with you and come back because you did it differently than most places. They didn't feel transactional. They felt like you really cared for them and their vehicle and looked out for them. And that's what this is about. This is how you get repeat business. This is how you build and maintain client relationships.
I could just stop right there because like just that one segment is so powerful. I remember myself learning this lesson for the first time. And I think you were a service advisor, and I think it was you who made me have this realization. But it's the importance of the marketing team communicating with the service advisor. And so in this moment, I'm really talking about like when we had Peak Automotive, I was doing the marketing and you were the service advisor. So whether it's that you've got a company or someone outside of your shop doing your marketing, that marketing side or arm and the service advisor need to be communicating. I've seen so many times, and again, I learned this the hard way, is I never told you about the campaign I was running, and I don't remember which one it was, but you started getting these phone calls and you were like, I don't remember how you handled it, but I know that you handled it professionally. But I learned, oh my gosh, I never told the service advisors who answered the phone that we were running this campaign or this special offer or this whatever thing. And so you were kind of thrown off by someone calling saying, hey, I want to schedule an appointment for this $500 off special office offer. And you're like,
let me put you on a brief hold. Let me check something. I'll be right back.
But like the service advisor impacts the promise that is in the ads or in that magazine or being talked about at your BNI group or whatever. Like, do you remember any of that? Or do you have anything to say about service advisors being surprised by some special promotion or just in general, how can that be fixed?
I think it's just in general. I don't remember that specific instance, but you know, if I handled it well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, I just know you, so I know you handled it well.
I appreciate that. But I think surprises in general, and the biggest rule of thumb, and you mentioned earlier not to go backwards, but if I walked into a shop and I was kind of getting a feel for what's going on and what's happening, you know, 9 times out of 10, the communication is broken inside the shop. And there's always this huge communication break between service advisors and technicians. Now, I've been in a shop atmosphere where the service advisors and technicians communicate on a regular basis. And if there's a concern that comes up or a problem that comes up, we have a conversation about it, not an argument. And I've also been in the shop atmosphere before where the service advisor or service advisors and technicians, it's kind of like there's not good communication in there and there's not respect there. That is the beginnings of just a bad situation at hand. So communication is imperative, whether it's internal marketing, external marketing, having those daily huddles or, you know, meetings in the morning. What I've come to the realization is it's made me a better person because of you guys, but we used to have a shop meeting where I worked maybe every other day. It wasn't always consistent daily. We tried for it, didn't happen, but hey, we stood in a circle. We said, hey, what's going on with this vehicle? What's going on with the vehicle? What's going on with this vehicle? And everybody kind of went around and we said, okay, cool. You know, we kind of communicated, which is better than no communication. But now when I get to join the team at work in the morning, you know, we have our Zoom tiles up. Not only what are we doing for the day, what are our priorities, but we get to go around and say what we're grateful for. I wish I had that element in the shop atmosphere. It could be the littlest thing. But it starts off with, could you imagine like standing with a group of technicians in the shop that have never done it before and saying, hey, today we're going to start off with a grateful. What are you grateful for? And I think everybody's eyes are going to get wide and their mouths are going to drop and go, what are you talking about? It could be a personal, it could be work grateful. What are you grateful for? And the more you do that, it just makes you feel good. The basis of this is communication and opening up and creating that environment, creating that synergy, that collaboration. And I really feel in my heart of hearts, Kim, that when clients walk into your business and they feel that collaboration with your team, that synergy, just the way you're talking to a coworker, like they feed off it, it's positive energy. And they're like, man, I'm really at the right place. Versus they come in, again, maybe they got the ring the bell thing up front, or maybe somebody's up there and they get no acknowledgement. And then a technician comes out of left field and starts complaining about something. It's like, whoa, what's going on? Like, you know, negative. So, you know, the communication is just essential. The front and the back, marketing, explaining to the team what's going on, etc. But, you know, I've often found just the communication is broken internally and it's easy to fix. We just have, sometimes you got to have those hard conversations in the beginning to get everybody kind of realigned that we're here for the customer, right? We're working together to help the customer and getting kind of a baseline.
I remember communication being a disconnect for us. And I don't know if you remember this. God, I hope that you do, because it was very difficult for me because I'm a talker. But do you remember the time we came back from, I don't know, some coaching program with this harebrained but very effective idea to have a no talking day? Everything had to be written. And we were trying to get team members away from the run up to the front. This was before we had all this great software that shops have now, right? Everything was pretty much written. I mean, I think we had RO Writer, but we were trying to get people to realize that if it's not typed, it's not communicated. Like, you can't trust that people just remember what you said. It's got to be written down. And I remember coming back, Brian and I were like, okay, for one day, you can't use your voice. You have to type everything. And we didn't have Slack. Like, I don't know, but the communication between the back and the front, and yeah, the different teams, marketing to the service advisor or whatever, it's just a really big deal. So that was a wild, do you remember that? Or is that just in my head?
Vaguely. I don't think I had a problem with it because I was typing anyways. So
that's true. No, it was probably definitely the techs who were running from the back up to the front. And they're like, wait, what? You want me to type this in? But yeah, it's just a look ahead, right? So back then, looking ahead, we probably would never, ever be thinking that we'd have the tools and the options that we'd have today. So continuing to look ahead, right? We're almost to 2026. Do you see the service advisor role evolving in any particular ways that you can possibly imagine, whether it's marketing or sales or whatever it might be? Because I feel like listening to speakers in the industry, Craig O'Neill does a fabulous job putting this out there. And he has a presentation. I've seen this one slide a couple of different times where he lists out every task that a service advisor has to do. And it is a lot. So I don't know if it's that we take things away from the service advisor or if you have thoughts on what might be added to service advisors, but like, how can shops prepare for service advising in the future?
We definitely talk about the future, but also I really just for a quick moment want to talk about the present, right? So if you're assigned to be there, say technically your clock in time is or whatever, you're as a service advisor, you're 8 to 5, you know, 9 to 6 or whatever. If you show up at 10 to 8, it's not going to work. I mean, there's especially coming off of the weekend, coming into a Monday, right? You have to think consciously. You're going to have emails that you weren't expecting. There might be night drops that you weren't anticipating. There might be, and I've experienced it before, somebody has towed their vehicle in and is blocking the shop door. Why in almighty is that parked there? I don't know, but it is, but we got to figure it out. You have to get in a rhythm of being proactive versus reactive. And I don't think that's going to change from present to future. And I know it sounds like for a lot of service advisors, man, I don't want to work more. I already do enough. Coming in a half hour early is not going to hurt you. It's going to set you up for success and it's going to prevent you from working harder. It's going to help you, that being proactive. Some of the tools that I wish I had at the time that weren't available, and I wouldn't have misused it, but ChatGPT, there's so many cool things about that that you can help to create a quick email. You know, if I got a note back from a technician with just, I will call it, you know, sometimes tech speak, just, you know, 3 or 4 words of this is the concern and I'm trying to piece it together, but I have a good grasp on my product knowledge. I'm going to type that in and give me, you know, the pros and cons. So I can kind of copy and paste that and put that in with what I'm going to send to the client. But ultimately, one thing that's not changing, but we need to change as service advisors, is just learning, being around more service advisors, being around people that understand how this business is, right? So me being a service advisor, not saying I couldn't, but taking the advice from a technician who's never been a service advisor before doesn't make sense. You want to surround yourself with like-minded people and people that are doing the same thing as you in the industry and pool that knowledge, right? So just take classes when you can. Go to expos. If you look at the calendar for 2026 and it's blank and your shop has no movement on going to a class, well, I mean, Worldpac, they offer classes locally if you're a Worldpac vendor, right? Talk with your manager, talk with your owner, say, hey, look, I would like to get out of this building for 2 days and go learn something new. The learning is what keeps us growing because the industry keeps growing. And if we're not learning, you know, we're setting ourselves up to fail, basically.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Well, this went in a couple of areas I didn't expect, but it was awesome. And I really appreciate it. I hope that it gave some listeners the idea, like I've talked about auditing your first impressions, like, you know, shops, we get in the daily grind of things, if you will, and you don't notice or recognize that this cobweb was being built over in the corner, or maybe you recognize that that one light on your sign went out when you passed by a couple of nights ago and you're like, I got to replace that light bulb or whatever. But things just start building up. And I think that that can also happen in the service advisor world where we get in our habits. We just kind of start doing the same routine. But like you said, don't take a class, don't get inspired by a coach or another service advisor or another shop. And so when we go to these classes and conferences and things like that, it's just like a good moment to press the refresh button. And so I think that we gave some of those maybe moments where the people listening are like, yeah, I probably need to add that in, or I need to get back to doing that, or that is definitely a good thing for me to start doing. I would hurt myself if I did not ask this question. Like, we didn't see you for years, like 15 years or something, and then we bumped into each other at STX, but you had no idea that we were talking about you all those 15 years. We would teach classes and we were always talking about Michael, our service advisor. And we talked all the time about how you, on your own, we did not tell you to do this, though it was fabulous and we very much appreciated it. And our clients talked about it all the time, was you showed up like you're dressed today. For those that are not watching this on YouTube and you're not seeing, Michael works from home. He could be in pajama bottoms or nothing. I mean, I don't know, but he's wearing this buttoned up collared shirt with a tie. And you would come to work as a service advisor like that. And it was such an incredible mind shift. And optics is everything, right? It just made a huge difference in how our clients felt walking into that. I haven't seen you wear this at Shop Marketing Pros very often. I feel like you're wearing a Shop Marketing Pros collared shirt. Did you dress up for our podcast today?
I did dress up for our podcast. It was like, I felt like a kid before Christmas. I was super excited. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to shirt and tie it today. No, like I'd probably say twice a month, honestly, Kim, I wear a shirt and tie if I'm on a Zoom call with somebody or just doing stuff for, you know, the team. But like, I feel everybody's got that one, two, maybe three outfits that just makes them feel, you know, not like a superhero, but just, you just feel better when you're wearing a certain article of clothing, right? And I think I just dated myself saying article of clothing, you know, like a baseball hat or whatever, but just like, especially from a first impression standpoint with a client, right? And I get it. A lot of people aren't going to wear a shirt and tie, but consider a polo shirt, something where you look like you work there, right? But I think like, if I may, just speaking freely, like when I wear this, I just feel better. I don't know how to explain it. Like, I just feel like I'm on my game. I'm more confident. I'm able to speak more eloquently. I just feel very up. Like I've adjusted. I feel like I'm on normally at volume 10 and I went to like volume 20. Like, it just has like this thing for me. And every once in a while, I like to just dress up. It's okay to change it up once in a while. But ultimately, I think one thing that inadvertently it did for, you know, Peak Automotive, which was we got a lot of females that were coming in, complimenting the front end staff and how they were dressed, right? So that right there, I mean, people are taking notice, and inadvertently me doing that got other team members up front to wear a shirt and a tie or whatever. But it just, I don't know. It's kind of just like, it's everybody, but you just got to rock it once in a while.
I totally get it. And I was going to say, if you didn't say it, but you're absolutely correct. When you stepped up your dressing game, others started doing the same. And I remember a picture. In fact, it might be in here in my office right now. I'll have to look for it, where we had three of you service advisors and all three of y'all were dressed in that. But yeah, but I completely get it, right? I work from home. I'm recording this podcast from the office at my house. My bedroom, my closet is like 15 steps that way. And every single day I get up and I get dressed and I put on a nice outfit. I could be wearing leggings and a t-shirt every day. But like you just said, there is a massive shift that happens in me. If I'm not like dressed up, I feel too relaxed, too comfortable. I don't feel like I'm at work. And so I've had people say to me, friends who will pop in, or, you know, I'll run out to town for something. People are like, oh, you're so dressed up. Don't you work from home? And I'm like, yes, I do, but it's still work. I'm still going to work. So I love that you brought that up, but I have a very important question.
Sure.
Are you wearing socks?
No.
So y'all, here's what's happening. We were messaging earlier in Slack about this podcast, and Michael, like, I don't remember you being such a jokester when we worked together at Peak Automotive, but not only are you cracking jokes regularly, but y'all, he is the very first. He said he shows up 30 minutes early. I'm pretty positive he shows up 30 minutes early online to work as well, because in our, we call it the office chat channel in Slack, that's where people will say, I'm here. It's like when you walk into the building, you say, hey, everybody, good morning. So people will pop into our office chat and say, good morning. So we'll have like 30 good mornings in a row, but there's always this meme or some inspirational quote or message that Michael is putting in there, in addition to some little jokes. We were messaging, just getting ready for the podcast. And I said, all right, I'll see you in the studio in a few minutes. And he said, should I wear socks? And I was like, well, as long as they're funny. So for those who don't know, JR wears these funny, crazy socks every day. He's got some weird, crazy, very bright, colorful kind of socks. So I just had to ask if he was wearing socks. But listen, y'all, thanks for hanging out with us today. Really appreciate you listening to the Auto Repair Marketing Podcast on the Aftermarket Radio Network. There are some other great shows on the network. You can find them all at aftermarketradionetwork.com or on your favorite podcast listening apps like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many others. Michael, where can they find your podcast?
It's on Apple Podcasts. It is the Auto Fix Advisor Cast. It comes out every Friday. I think right now we're up to like episode 51. And I was going to ask you, like, am I allowed to take lunch after this? Is this considered my lunch break, or do I get to take lunch still?
I guess I'll let you do that. All right.
No, I appreciate it.
Thanks for being here, Michael. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Tune in for another episode next week. Until then, go fill those bays.
You've been listening to the Auto Repair Marketing Podcast with Kim and Brian Walker. Follow the podcast on your favorite listening app. Find their emails in the show notes and visit them at shopmarketingpros.com. Let Kim and Brian know what you want discussed, because they're all about advancing the aftermarket.